Working remotely, where you are shouldn't dictate what you do. Work from the road by turning your vehicle into a reliable high-speed data Wi-Fi hotspot with AT&T in-car Wi-Fi. On the network that covers more roads than any other carrier, take your work on the road and AT&T will be there to keep you connected. Connect up to 10 devices and stream conference calls, finish up that presentation, or answer last-minute emails. Why wait? Go to att.com/in-car Wi-Fi today for free trial eligibility. Based on independent third-party data, number of devices varies by manufacturer. Always pay careful attention to the road and don't drive distracted. Wi-Fi hotspot intended for passenger use only when vehicle is in operation. Compatible device and vehicle required.
Whether it's her first Mother's Day or her 40th, she deserves more. Shop tons of stunning on-trend jewelry for every budget at Diamonds Direct. Diamond fashion jewelry, beautiful birthstones, everyday pearls, starting at just $200. Commemorate the real loves of her life with a gorgeous pendant featuring the birthstone of the one who made her mom. This Mother's Day, Diamonds Direct has everything you need to say thank you. Diamonds Direct, your love, our passion. Online at DiamondsDirect.com.
It's brand new season two. I'm Marissa Thalberg.
And I'm Stephen Wolf Bedeta. And we're excited to be back having bigger, bolder, and always real conversations.
Straight from the C-suite front lines of marketing, media, and more.
We have great friends joining from people you may know, like Wilmer Valderrama and Bobby Burke.
And people you'll want to know. So grab a coffee or, hey, even an Aperol Spritz and come join us on America's number one podcast network, iHeart.
Listen to Brand New on the iHeart Radio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Imagine you ask two people the same seven questions. I'm Minnie Driver, and this was the idea I set out to explore in my podcast, Mini Questions. This year, we bring a whole new group of guests to answer the same seven questions, including Courtney Cox, Rob Delaney, Liz Phair, and many, many more. Join me on season three of Mini Questions on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your favorite podcasts. Seven questions, limitless answers.
Brought to you by the reinvented 2012 Camry. It's ready. Are you?
Get in touch with technology with Tech Stuff from HowStuffWorks.com.
Hi, everybody. Welcome to the podcast. My name is Chris Paulette. I'm an editor here at HowStuffWorks. Sitting next to me, as usual, is senior writer Jonathan Strickland.
Hey there, Chris. Download any good books lately?
As a matter of fact, I have.
Wow. I didn't expect that to actually work.
Well, as you could tell, we're going to talk about electronic books today, or e-books.
Right.
I think we were inspired to do this because we just recently put an article up on our website.
Right.
That somebody – who wrote that?
Oh, that'd be me.
Oh, yeah. About the Amazon Kindle.
I'm all about the self-promotion. Yeah. I wrote an article about the Amazon Kindle. But before we get into e-book readers – because, I mean, that's really just part of the story. I guess we can talk about e-books themselves. Now, of course, electronic books, that's just – it's a book in electronic format so that you read it with an electronic device such as a computer or an e-book reader or an iPhone or whatever, right? It's just – it's an electronic device that can access this sort of file and display it.
Absolutely.
And they were kind of – it's interesting. It was actually kind of slow to catch on. Considering that, you know, we really got the World Wide Web back in what, like 92, essentially. And it was all text back then. There were hardly any graphics. And yet the idea of using the internet to distribute books took a while. There was a lot of publishers kind of dragging their feet on the whole issue. And in fact, I remember back in 2000, you may remember this as well, Chris. There was a very famous author who kind of made a splash about trying to do an electronic book publication strategy that hadn't really been done before. I'm talking about Stephen King.
Uh-huh.
Do you remember this at all?
Actually, no, I don't.
No? Okay, so back in 2000, he released a novella, which of course is longer than a short story, but shorter than a novel. It's called Riding the Bullet. And he published that electronically, so you could download that and read it, you know, whenever. And then he decided he was going to try something new. He was going to try and publish a book chapter by chapter offering each chapter up for download for, I think it was originally $1 a chapter. Mm-hmm. And he said that he was going to monitor how many people downloaded the book. And as long as 75% of the people who downloaded the book were paying for the book, he would continue to write.
Okay, now I'm starting to remember that now.
Right.
That sounds, okay, yeah.
And if it dipped below 75%, game over. He stops. So first chapter comes out, and apparently he does more than 75% of the business.
Right.
And so people actually pay for it. And then the second chapter comes out and dipped a little bit. I think it actually hit 70%, but they went ahead and did the third chapter. Fourth chapter, as I recall, he doubles the price. Now it's $2 for the chapter, but he also doubles the output. So it's about twice as many pages as you would have received in one of the previous installments.
Mm-hmm.
I think it only got up to 6 chapters and then it stopped in 2000.
Mm-hmm.
And since then, there's been no progress on The Plant, which is the name of the book. So that experiment kind of fizzled, but I think it laid the groundwork for the electronic books industry that we see today. It's just that it was one of those early attempts that didn't quite make it.
Now, there have been other publishers who have tried different experiments like that, and usually I think it's based on the will of the author trying to, you know, get the experiment started. People like Cory Doctorow, especially the most recent effort, Little Brother. It did pretty well after making it available on, you know, for free on digital download. It still sold a lot of copies. Neil Gaiman has also offered some of his work online for free.
My wife's going to kill me because I forgot the name of the author, but the author of The Dresden Files, he always or seems to always offer up the first few chapters of whichever novel has just come out for free. So that it's essentially you get a chance to get hooked into the story. Now it's just the first few chapters, so you still have to go out and buy a copy of the book.
Yeah.
But it has been a very effective way of getting new readers.
Yes. He wouldn't, if you will, butcher.
Oh, yes, Jim Butcher. Thank you. Thank
work.
You. Yes, now my wife will only maim me instead of kill me.
Well, you know.
I'm also a fan of the books. She's the mega fan, and I'm also a fan. But there are other ones as well who do the same sort of thing. They authors either put up an entire book or part of a book as a way to, but that's still usually a way to sell the physical book.
Yeah, it's sort of a way to whet the appetite. Bain offers a science fiction publisher offers free books for download from time to time, and a lot of times those are the first in a series. Tor, another
right.
science fiction
sure.
fantasy publisher did that not too long ago. And it, when you asked me the question, it hadn't been that long ago that I downloaded 6 or 7 ebooks from there. Actually, at one point, McGraw-Hill, the educational publisher, was offering something that they called beta books. Now, last time I went on the site, I don't think they're doing this the same way they used to, but they were offering pre-printed versions of the book. The point was, it was in beta. It was unfinished. If you had a correction that you saw, you know, hey, wow, this thing is completely wrong. What you mean to do is here, or there's a typo in this page. You could actually contact McGraw-Hill and let them know, which was kind of a different thing, but you still got access to that content, which was, you know, pretty cool.
Yeah.
But most of these are offered in PDF format.
Sure.
Or, you know, the Windows Reader format, which has been the two de facto standards for ebooks over the course of ebookdom, mainly because most people are reading them on their computers.
Until the Amazon Kindle came along, really.
Well, sort of.
You had other ebook readers before, but I don't think they had the same sort of – they didn't get the same sort of press or adoption rates as the Kindle, although – it's arguable whether or not the Kindles even had a really high adoption rate because hardly anyone ever seems to see them.
Right. Well, the two I first came in contact with, and we're talking more than 10 years ago, are the Rocket Book and the Soft Book, both of which were very early designs. They basically supported text and they had LCD screens. They – they probably would seem more primitive to those familiar with the Amazon Kindle, because you had to hook them up to your computer.
Sure.
You know, the battery life was 20 hours, you know, stuff like that. Really just didn't catch on, even though some of them, one of them had a leather cover to design it, and one of them was actually the size, about the size of a paperback book. You'd think maybe, you know, some people would buy it, but it really just didn't take off. I mean, as a matter of fact, you may, those of you listening, may never have heard of these, just simply because they just didn't get the press.
And I, well, I think it goes beyond just the I think it goes beyond just the press issue. I think for a lot of people, particularly of our generation or older, it's hard to imagine replacing the experience of reading a physical book with an electronic version. There's certain things that you just associate with reading. You associate that the feel of the paper or even the smell of a book. And these seem like kind of silly things to talk about, but I think for some people it really is part of what they associate with, you know, reading a book. And if you don't have that, it doesn't really feel like you're reading. Also, things like the LCD screens, they tend to cause a lot of eye strain. So after you were – it's just like if you've been staring at a computer all day long. Do you have any idea what that's like, Chris?
Yeah.
I do too. And after you've been staring at a computer for a while, you do get eye strain. You know, your eyes get tired. And that was part of the problem with some of these earlier ebook readers as well. They use the same sort of technology that you would find in a LCD computer screen. And so, yeah, that I think played a factor into the whole slow adoption rate as well, where, yeah, you had the availability, but the technology just didn't appeal to people quite as much.
Yep. And I think that's why the Sony Reader and the Amazon Kindle, which are the current generation of ebook readers, mm-hmm. That's a big part of it, is this little company in Cambridge, Massachusetts.
Yes, e-ink.
Yep, I love the e-ink. I actually have I don't have an electronic book reader, but I have messed with the Sony Reader in a Borders bookstore, which is one of the retail outlets that you can find them in. And you should at least take a look at it, because e-ink is completely different from LCD.
Right.
Basically, inside the display of a Sony Reader or an Amazon Kindle, what you have are little capsules. And inside the little capsules are more little capsules that are floating in a liquid.
Right.
And on either side of the larger capsule is an electronic
– an electrode.
Yeah, an electrode.
Yeah.
And which is the funny name for that.
Yeah. Anyway. No, it's okay. I just wrote the article, Chris. It's all right.
It's all right. All right. So what happens is you put a positive or a negative charge, and it draws the little capsules inside, which have pigment in them,
right,
to one side or another. And you can actually by fine-tuning that charge, you can actually make different shades of gray,
mm-hmm,
or black or light.
And you form pictures and letters, and that's why it looks like ink. I mean, it really kind of is ink. And yeah. So it's designed so that there's no backlight to,
nope,
these screens. So it looks to your eye kind of the same way as it would if you were looking at a piece of paper with ink on it.
It's really remarkable, the similarity. I mean, if you've ever looked at it, did that experiment in science class where you had to look at a piece of newsprint under a microscope,
right,
you could see that it's, you know, made up of tiny little dots.
Yeah, it's the same principle, really.
Yeah, it really works very, very similarly.
And
so
the,
it's impressive.
The nice thing also is that it takes less energy to run one of these devices than it would for an LCD screen, because it's not powering a backlight. Essentially, it only needs to exert energy whenever you're changing a page, when you're changing an image. Like if you, not just changing a page, but if you were like increasing the font size or whatever, it would have to exert some energy in order to make the change visible. But between those, it doesn't have to use up any electricity, so you have a battery charge that lasts a longer time. In fact, the Kindle, Amazon claims the Kindle can last for more than a week on a single charge if you're just, you know, reading books, if you're not using the wireless capability. We should probably also talk a little bit about the differences between the Kindle and the Sony book reader. The Kindle is a wireless device, and it works really well with Amazon's electronic bookstore. So you can purchase books directly from your Kindle and have them download straight to the device. You don't have to sync it with a computer. You can connect it to a computer and transfer files over from the computer to the Kindle, but it's not necessary for the Kindle to work. The Sony one is different. You have to sync that with your computer. But on the flip side, the new version of the Sony e-reader has a touch screen, which the Kindle does not. And you can even change pages by swiping your finger across the screen, which to a lot of people, that's so much more attractive than pushing a button. For one thing, it kind of brings back that feeling that you're reading a book, you know, you're turning a page. For another, the Amazon, one of the criticisms that the Amazon Kindle has had over the brief period of its life is that the button placement is such that if you pick up a Kindle, you're almost guaranteed to accidentally turn a page because the buttons are on the side of it. So you don't, you know, you're trying to put your hands in such a way where you're not covering up the screen or smudging the screen, but that means you're touching the sides. That's where all the next page or previous page buttons are found. And they're large, so it's very easy to accidentally hit one of those. And then next thing you know, you're on the wrong page. So, yeah, they each have their own merits and their own drawbacks. I think they're both, from what I've seen, very good devices. I think they're both also probably a little more expensive than the average consumer would care to spend for something that they would think of, hey, this just lets me read books. The Kindle I know is, I think, $359 right now. And that's unless you use Oprah Winfrey's coupon, in which case it's $309. Oprah Winfrey called the Kindle her favorite gadget recently, and I'm sure that gave a nice boost to Kindle sales. The Sony one, I think, I believe the new one's going to be $400.
Well, but that's – you bring up an interesting point because neither of these is just an ebook reader anymore because they both handle a variety of files and both of them play music.
Right.
You can listen to MP3s on either one of them.
So you can listen to an Audible book on your book reading device.
There you go. you know, the Kindle can download RSS feeds.
That's true.
And you can also get newspapers and things on there, too.
Yeah, you can look at blogs and things. Yeah.
So, yeah, I mean, it's these are much more sophisticated than those very early ebook readers.
Sure.
And talking about price, that's one of those things that people who are particularly critical of the ebooks, I think, really point out is, you know, hey, I got to spend $300 or $400 for this machine. And on top of that, I'm paying full price for the books. Because in the bookstores, essentially, you're not really getting a discount, or at least not much of a discount on electronic books themselves.
Yeah.
So, you know, that's something that you have to weigh. Now, there are conveniences too. You can take a whole library full of stuff in your backpack and it doesn't weigh any more than the electronic reader.
Right.
Which is nice if you're going on a trip or, you know, they've been talking for a long time about students who could download textbooks. You could have a stack of textbooks and not have to worry about it. Or people who use a lot of literature like physicians or lawyers who are going to have to carry lots and lots of documents and lots of books for reference. This is a great thing for them. Then again, those materials, I'm not sure how much of that is available because it seems like the majority of the stuff I've seen is entertainment.
Right. Yeah, the Kindle can hold, according to Amazon, up to 200 titles. So when you think about that, you can carry – it's the same as being able to carry 200 books wherever you go. And there's a capacity for a smart card, so you can hold even more than that, really. And not only that, but you can delete the stuff that's on your Kindle, and it actually still exists on a online cloud computing kind of account. So you can always download it again for no additional charge because you've already purchased the book. So, yeah, you've got this potentially unlimited library that you can carry around with you because since it's wireless, you could always download a book that you already purchased and delete another one, whatever you wanted to do. So the convenience factor definitely is there. The question about the price is a big one, the price of the individual books. From a publisher standpoint, I'm sure it has to be a little frightening because – theoretically, an author could bypass a publisher completely and self-publish and allow, you know, sell these electronic books on his or her own website. Now, the author would have to pay for hosting services and probably for bandwidth as well as people downloaded the book. But on the other hand, the author would get to keep pretty much all the profit.
Yep.
I mean, right now, I can tell you from my own experience, I'm the son of authors. Both of my parents are published authors.
I know you're a son of an author.
Yes. And son of two authors, actually. But the authors do not get to keep 100% of the profits from their books.
No.
Actually, the percentage is very small in comparison to the to what the publisher gets.
And they don't get to keep the copyrights either.
And
because they've licensed that to
the publisher. Now, you can't sit there and call the publishers necessarily like big, mean, greedy people because there are very real costs associated with publishing. I mean, you're talking about using hard materials to create books. So you're talking about paper and you're talking about ink and you're talking about the actual printers.
Distribution, marketing.
Marketing, yeah. All of these things cost money. Right. And now ebooks takes a lot of that and eliminates it. You don't have to worry about production costs as much. You have to worry about hosting and you have to worry about bandwidth. Marketing can be a lot more simple when you're using just electronic versions of marketing, you know, social networks, things like email, Twitter, newsletters, that kind of stuff. It has the potential to really kick publishing in the pants, which I think is another reason why we see the ebook phenomenon taking longer than you would imagine it would take. Because I don't know that a lot of publishers are really eager to jump on that train just yet. They're still a little wary of where this is going to go.
Sure, sure. And for good reason.
Yeah. 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 There are plenty of good reasons from a business perspective to be a little nervous. Now, granted, if they can find a way to capitalize on that, to monetize it. First of all, I don't think that physical books are ever going to go away.
Right.
They just have to make sure that they are able to balance it out just right so that they produce enough physical books to meet that demand without overproducing and then operating at a loss. And also a way to monetize the electronic books so that it makes sense from a financial standpoint to offer both. If they can find that, then, you know, they've hit the holy grail, which is, and what's interesting is this doesn't apply just to publishing. You could say that online distribution, I mean, that's going to be the future of delivering entertainment and information. It already is to a large extent here.
Right.
But you're not just going to see this in journalism and publishing. You're going to see it in television. And it's already happening in television and music, movies. All these things are looking at online distribution as the next big thing. And mm-hmm. It's either the next big scary thing or the next big, this is awesome, we're all really filthy rich thing.
I'm for the last one.
I would not object to being filthy rich.
Right now you're just filthy.
I hear that wealth is a burden, but it's one I'm willing to bear.
All right then.
Well, I guess we've pretty much covered this topic from start to finish, I think.
Cover to cover.
Nice. Good one.
I think it's time to turn the page.
You were ahead. You were ahead and now you're behind again. But if you want to learn more about ebooks, you can read lots of articles such as How the Amazon Kindle Works. That's going to be live at howstuffworks.com, and we'll talk to you again really soon.
For more on this and thousands of other topics, visit howstuffworks.com. Let us know what you think. Send an email to podcast@howstuffworks.com.
Brought to you by the reinvented 2012 Camry. It's ready. Are you?
It's brand new season 2. I'm Marissa Thalberg.
And I'm Stephen Wolf Bedeta. And we're excited to be back having bigger, bolder, and always real conversations.
Straight from the C-suite front lines of marketing, media, and more.
We have great friends joining from people you may know, like Wilmer Valderrama and Bobby Burke.
And people you'll want to know. So grab a coffee or, hey, even an Aperol Spritz and come join us on America's number one podcast network, iHeart.
Listen to Brand New on the iHeart Radio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Imagine you ask two people the same 7 questions. I'm Minnie Driver, and this was the idea I set out to explore in my podcast, Mini Questions. This year, we bring a whole new group of guests to answer the same 7 questions, including Courtney Cox, Rob Delaney, Liz Phair, and many, many more. Join me on season 3 of Mini Questions on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your favorite podcasts. 7 questions, limitless answers.
Discover a new educational and interactive podcast, Stories for Kids by Lingo Kids. Our episodes are packed with fun activities. Right, Elliot?
Oh, yes! We went shape hunting around the block, and we found spheres and cubes on the street.
That was great fun. Join Stories for Kids, the Lingo Kids podcast, inspiring you to learn while having fun. Listen to Stories for Kids on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
My whole life, I've been told this one story about my family, about how my great-great-grandmother was killed by the mafia back in Sicily. I was never sure if it was true, so I decided to find out. And even though my Uncle Jimmy told me I'd only be making the vendetta worse, I'm going to Sicily anyway. Come to Italy with me to solve this 100-year-old murder mystery. Listen to The Sicilian Inheritance on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.